Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went into the Woods, with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Marsha Milgram Dodge, auditioned choreographer.
Once upon a time.
Marsha Milgram Dodge auditioned to choreograph the original production of Into the Woods and actually choreographed the acclaimed arena stage production of Merrily We Roll Along. She was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Direction of a Musical, as well as the Drama Desk Awards for Outstanding Director and Outstanding Choreography, and the Astaire Award for directing and choreographing the revival of Ragtime. One of the most sought-after directors and choreographers working today, her regional theater resume is sprawling, and she is also an Edgar-nominated playwright for Sherlock Holmes and the West End Horror, which she co-wrote with her husband, Anthony Dodge, and she launched At Directing Musicals, a private studio for training early career directors and actors. Just give me a little history of what, you know, I assume you were kind of already a Sondheim fan before Into the Woods came into being. So yeah. What was your Sondheim, you know?
My introduction was a touring company of a little night music in Ann Arbor when I was in school there. So I was in school from 73 to 77. So I'm not sure exactly what year it was, but I know it was George Lee Andrews was playing Frederick, and they played the Power Center in Ann Arbor, which was a new building, which is where I ended up, you know, getting my first chances to choreograph in that beautiful new building. And I remember buying the album and playing it over and over again and marveling at everything in three-quarter time. I was like, I had studied piano, but I was, you know, I started dancing when I was three, and so musicals and movies and all that stuff was my lifeline. So and then when I came to New York, well, I moved here in 77, and the whole Sondheim stuff began in the late 80s when Ira Weitzman, who I had worked at Playwrights Horizons, I had done a kooky Peter Parnell play. What was the name of that? Romance Language, Peter Parnell. And met Ira, and then Ira invited me to audition to choreograph Into the Woods. I was like, and we had never, I didn't even know that was a thing, you know? So this was way before Dance Break and all that, you know, we I used to just answer ads in backstage. And if it said choreographer TBD, I would send my resume. That's how I did it. So Ira invited me. He set up a meeting with me and James, and we had a nice conversation. And he said, I'd like you to stage the opening number two different ways. One with excitement and two with trepidation. So
excited and scared.
Excited and scared, right? So I was working part-time at a dress shop on the Upper West Side. They had a great dress, big sort of open dressing room with big mirrors. And at the end of my shift, I locked the front door, went in there with my cassette player and my cassette and my friend Dawn, who worked with me. And I started moving around to the music and trying to figure out how to stage. I knew I was going to have Little Red, Jack, the baker, and his wife. And they were giving me those four characters. I don't think I had Jack's mother, but I had those four.
What was on that cassette? Was it Sondheim singing? Or because this was before they even
No, this was after they did
San Diego. So was it a recording from
there? It was a recording from the show, and I had a script.
Mm, okay.
So, and I guess when I looked at the stage directions about where the houses were set up, I inverted Little Red, and the Baker was, Jack was in the middle, but I inverted Little Red and the Baker. I put Little Red on the other side. Anyway, so I started playing, and I came up with this idea built off of patty cake for the baker and his wife, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then I did a kind of Wizard of Oz step, inspired traveling step for the sort of galloping feel of da 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 da. So anyway, I'm dancing around this dressing room, right?
Yeah.
And I worked for, I guess they gave me about a week or something. And then the day I was supposed to go to 890 Broadway, I walked into this huge studio to meet everybody. And it was Chip Zion and Joanna Gleason and Kim Crosby. And then two young actors who were auditioning for Jack and Little Red. And the accompanist, Paul Ford.
Paul Ford.
So it was like very heady and very, exciting. And we worked for a few hours, took a break. And then the creative team arrived, and it was James and Steve. And he said, on that day, he said, call me Steve.
Mm.
And producer, set designer, Heidi Landisman. And yes. I think there might have been a couple other people there. Mm-hmm. And so I presented the work. And this was so weird, because I never did this before. And then I packed up my bag and said thank you to everybody and shook hands. And I went into that big, wonderful old elevator with the clanging doors. And as I got in, the door started to close and hands kind of shot in and opened it. And it was the entire cast.
Wow.
It was everybody. And they were very, very complimentary. And I like floated home on a, from 890 Broadway to West 73rd Street. I don't even know how I got home. I just flew. So it was very exhilarating. And and then the next day Ira called and said I didn't get the job. So I went about my business. I went up to the Berkshire Theater Festival that summer to work on a new musical, Portrait of Jenny, and Ed Lindeck was in the cast.
Oh, look at that.
I was like Sondheim connected. And then
this
was like late
summer
late
of 87.
Spring, early summer of 86, I think it was.
No,
87. Yeah.
So 87. So Ed Lindeck was not yet cast in Into the Woods.
Correct.
Because he didn't, I don't think he did the workshop they did that summer. I think he
No, went, but I have yeah. a workshop. So then, okay. So then I go to the Berkshires. Yes. I'm in rehearsal. And I don't know if you know the Berkshire Theater Festival, but in those days, there, no cell phones, obviously. So if you got a phone call, you had to like go to the office to take the call or something. So I went to the office and it was James. And he said, Lar may not continue with the project.
Oh.
We've been doing this workshop and I want you to come down and see it. Okay. So I finagled, either it was my day off or I finagled to get, to go. I got on a bus. I came to New York. I went to the workshop. It was a presentation. So tons of, I'm sure there were a lot of luminaries there. I was just kind of focused on, where's Steve? Where's James? They were preoccupied. I watched the run through Betty
Buckley. The whole show.
Betty Buckley was the witch.
Wow.
And I was sitting like, this close to her. It was like amazing. And I kind of wandered around afterwards to try to get their attention. They were very, not looking at me. So I left.
Yeah.
And then I went back up to the Berkshires and got a phone call. And it was Ira again. And he said, Lara's going to stay with the project. So
wow.
I called my mother. I said, I didn't get my Broadway show twice. So you have to come to New York and take me shopping. But later that summer, I got a call to meet with the creative team at Goodspeed about Little Rascals, which Joe Raposo was writing the score for. And that was on Sondheim's recommendation.
Oh, lovely. Well, obviously they respected you and liked you because they circled back to you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I had worked with Doug previously at Arena Stage, Doug Wager, who was the director. I worked with him on the Town in 1989. And then he said to me, I got the rights to do Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along. I want you to choreograph it. And I was so, and I'm sure they had to vet me through Steve, and Steve, you know, remembered me. So he was lovely to me during that time. It was a complicated, unfortunately, Doug had a fall in New York, ripped out his knees, was on codeine the whole time and not fully there. And the show was still kind of figuring itself out. And there were days that were just complicated. But I remember when Steve first came down and we had a big meeting in their boardroom or something, and he looked at me and he said, opening doors is brilliant. Now we have to talk about all the other numbers. And he was he was darling about it. And he was also very collaborative. He didn't want people to just say, yes, Steve, whatever you say, Steve. He wanted to get into the weeds with it, you know? And I was excited to do that with him and felt very heard and wasn't dismissed as, well, she doesn't know anything. She's the new girl. She's the young choreographer, whatever.
Yeah.
I never felt that with him. And one day I sort of seized an opportunity to give him a big idea. And Doug was unwell that day, and I'm not sure he was even in the building. We were in the theater putting the show on stage, and Victor was bogged down with all these costume changes.
Victor Garber played Franklin Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. And he just was, it seemed like it was bogging him down. And I just turned to Steve and said, what if Frank never changed his clothes? What if Frank just appears in the beginning of the play and stays, and we really understand that it's his journey back in an instant, right? In that moment of the acid in the face, the iodine in his girlfriend's face and all that stuff. And so Sondheim did this. This is like an amazing, can you see? He goes like this, puts his head down.
Hands in his head.
Head in his hands. And yeah. I thought it was like an hour went by, but it was probably like 15 seconds. And he lifted his head and he said, Marcia, that's either the most brilliant idea I've ever heard, or it's like when Hal said to me, let's put him in t-shirts with
no!
I was undeterred. I had spoken to Shakespeare, I had told him this idea. And later I got an opportunity to direct the show for NYU with the senior students at NYU, and the cast included who was in that cast? Noah Weisberg. No, it was Noah. Yeah, Noah Weisberg was in there. Anyway, I did it, and I applied my idea. Beowulf Borat was my set and costume designer. Yeah, like crazy, right? And Alex Corey saw it, and Alex ran up to me and like grabbed me, and she goes, you fixed it. So I was like, well, thanks, And then I tried to reach out to Steve to come see it, and he wasn't really interested. And, I think the show, hurt for him because it was a lot of, there's a lot of history and him and Al. But I saw the final performance on Broadway.
The original production.
The original production. Yeah.
Wait, I have so many questions.
Okay. Just I know, I'm a blabbermouth. So
no, I love it. I love it. Back to that Into the Woods workshop. I'm so curious if you remember anything else. I mean, that's thrilling, the idea of being, you know, just inches away from Betty Buckley playing the witch. What I'll do you remember about her performance, about the whole thing, everything?
The ferocity of her performance, especially the scene with Rapunzel, was unbelievable. So it was just, it broke the walls of the room. When I heard that she wasn't doing it on Broadway, I was like, why? But, you know, Bernadette's a treasure too.
And yeah, so, of course.
Honestly, that's about the only thing I remember about that run through. I like Lar. I worked with him as his associate on High Society.
Oh, wow. And, I didn't know
that's
that.
A whole nother podcast.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, Well, it's hard, you know. It's hard when you work on your own version in a dressing room at a shop.
two of your own versions.
Two of my own versions, yeah. So, but I do remember. I remember I remember the trepidation. I can't do the choreo, but I, in my mind's eye, I remember working with Chip and Joanna and that moment of them saying, we've done this 5 times with 5 different people and we really, really like you. Like, it was like, I felt like Sally Fields, you know? So
yeah,
I thought I had it in the bag, you know?
Well,
you can never take anything for granted.
But also, I mean, Lar was such a different direction to go, you know?
Well, he opened the door for bringing in the concert dance choreographers into the Broadway vocab, you know? And some of them, I think, are very successful. He had a really rough time during High Society.
Yeah.
It wasn't a marriage made in heaven on many levels.
Yeah.
And then ultimately Wayne Cilento came in and Wayne and I went into a studio and re-choreographed the whole show in like 10 days or something.
Yeah.
But Broadway's tricky.
Yeah. You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that, but I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert or desserts or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup except for like my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor Meals too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
But so, I mean, to be passed over in favor of someone from such a different direction, it must have felt less, you know, like a rejection of your work and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't take it too personally. I've been through situations since then where I'm invited to have a meeting because they're considering a different direction, and then I take the meeting and then I find out they're staying with the director that they were originally, you know. So I wonder if sometimes we're brought in to kind of galvanize their negotiations or to let them know that maybe you're not the only, you know, choreographer in the woods. Let's see if there's somebody else, you know. Just I don't know, it's a kooky business, right?
Yeah.
And I'm still here, so
I
quote Sondheim all the time. I'm definitely still here, and he was kind to me, and he talked about me to Beverly Sills, and I got a job at New York City Opera. He talked about me to Franny Lee, that was the conduit to the Little Rascals, because Franny had designed the costumes for Sweeney Todd and was working as a producer on this Little Rascals and doing costumes. So there were all these little connections, you know.
What did you do at City Opera, by the way?
I did The Music Man with Bob Gunton as Harold Hill.
Oh, wonderful. With Into the Woods, I'm so curious what you would have done with it, because you told me over email that you wound up never directing or choreographing.
Yeah, I haven't worked on
of it. Can you describe, I know you said you don't remember your exact, you know, choreography, but can you describe sort of what your different sort of vision for the movement of Into the Woods is, or was?
Yeah, I used to call myself a sort of choreographer behaviorist type choreographer. So for me, it was always about what are the gestures and behaviors of the character that can be expanded and illuminated through movement. Mm-hmm. And so because it was a fairy tale, the patty cake thing came to me kind of right away. And so during the trepidatious version of the title song, I had the baker and his wife kind of hold hands, and one wanted to go this way, one wanted to go that way, and they would do a kind of slapping, like, yeah, we're going this, you know. It's like based on patty cake. It wasn't like they did patty cake, but it used their hands.
Mm-hmm.
He was a baker, so he was, that's what he did. And so I just sort of built it on that. With the group trepidation, I gave them terrain. I gave them, obviously imaginary, but I gave them streams and tree trunks and things that they had to climb over and navigate, so that there was some obstacles consistently in their way. And so that's the kind of approach I took. With the happy version, the excited version, that's where I sort of leaned into finding a step that looked very unison, but each character did it in their own way, in the kind of the way that you see, you know, we're off to see the wizard.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't a skipping step. It was more of a traveling step, sort of more like a grapeviney kind of thing, which again, symbolically grapevine and sort of vining and weaving and patterns. I like to do a lot of figure eights and things like that.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was, I think, very theatrical. I would like to think I'd love the opportunity to work on the show sometime and see if I can apply some of those concepts. I haven't done that many Sondheim shows between Merrily. I've done 3 times. And I did.
Mentioned, besides Arena, you mentioned doing it at NYU. Where was the third?
The third was at SUNY Buffalo.
Mm.
I did it with the students up there.
Were they always the same version of Merrily that you had at the Arena?
Yes. We tried at Arena putting back in the school anthem, you know,
the Hills of Tomorrow. Yeah.
But it didn't work.
Yeah.
And then we did something at Arena. I'm not sure if it stayed in, where we started with the book, with the rooftop scene.
Interesting.
Just during the overture, and then it dissolved into the Los Angeles location.
I've heard people talk about the Arena production as being like the halfway point between the original Broadway incarnation and then I guess what was done at the York in like 90.
Yeah, and I don't know what Eric Schaefer did with it at the Sondheim Festival at the Kennedy.
Right, yeah,
Center.
In like 2002, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing for me was opening doors. I just had someone. I had David Garrison and Victor Garber and Maren Mazie and Becky Ann Baker. And it was just, I made it like Babes in Arms. You know, I had them, everything was on wheeled furniture. And Ruth, I mean, my ensemble was insane. I had Ruth Williamson.
Wow.
And I had Tom Hewitt and Tom Sesma and Eric Devine. It was like, it was, you know, David Garrison left Married with Children to come do this.
That's why he left Married with Children. It was worth it, it sounds like.
I know. And so, and then we thought we were going to Broadway and we didn't. So, but so opening doors for me was like it. And then I kind of worked backwards and I tried to give each transition, I tried to set up the scene that was coming with the transition that preceded it. So one of them I remember was like a singles bar. Like I had a, you know, like I had them doing it. And that's where Steve was like, I think you're overthinking. was like, I think they're just have to come out and sing. And I, you know, and I gave them like a quirky, you know, like tango step in one of the, in the sort of big production number of the opening number, and, you know, but the thing that was unfortunate was just, it wasn't the right environment scenically. And it didn't need all those costume changes. And I was, I remember when I worked with Beowulf on it, we created panels that were just kind of like three-sided panels, and they would, and the actors would just shift them during the transitions and take us to the next place. And even though it was done, you know, at school with students, which really is a great way to tell the story, right? Because that was their, always their intention. It, we just, we found some salute, you know, some strong choices that seemed to make sense. And having Alex Corey just scream in my ear, you got it. I was like, okay, I'm done with this show now. Okay. Let's put it in the, let's put it in the drawer. So, but I haven't seen the new production. Lindsay was a student of mine. I love her. And I don't know. It would be hard. It would be tough, I think, for me to,
I think they might now. I haven't seen it on Broadway yet. I saw it at New York Theater Workshop, but if memory serves, I think they have your concept of the like single costume, or at least in the two acts.
Yeah, that's what I read. I read that in Jesse. Which seems
I so I think the history has proven of the two possibilities. Steve said that you were having the most brilliant idea, not the worst idea.
Not the timing was off, right? It just wasn't good timing. I needed to wait 20 years to come up with that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, you and Merrily both. were there other Sondheim shows that you've worked on so far?
Well, I've done Gypsy twice with Vicki Lewis. She is my favorite Mama Rose.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I guess that must have been once at Sacramento Music Circus.
One at Music Circus, and then we did it again at Malt's Jupiter Theater in Florida.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just great. I know, son, I've never done West Side Story. I've done Forum a few times.
Oh, yeah?
And my most recent one was with the beautiful Peter Scolari, who sadly passed away 2 years ago, I think it is now. We did it at Bay Street Theater, so it was really intimate. And I remember and it was really crazy. I had Jackie Hoffman as Domino, and it was like, Nick Varina and Laura Lee Gayer were Hero and Philia.
Yeah.
And, McMillan and Wife. What's his name? He was my Senex. Can't think of his name. John Shuck was my
wonderful.
Senex.
Yeah, from Annie.
And then, and I wrangled Stuart Lane.
Oh, yeah.
He lives there. So I said, come and play Erroneous. My concept for Erroneous has evolved. I've done the show three times. I've done it with Gary Beach at Music Circus
as Pseudolus.
as Pseudolus.
Yeah.
I've done it with Jimmy Brennan, also at Music Circus.
I'm sure, and also brilliant. I did
it, also brilliant. Then I did it with, I did it once before where I just choreographed it for a theater in Massachusetts a long time ago. And then I did it, my third favorite was with Peter at Bay Street. And so my concept for Erroneous is that it's the Seven Hills marathon. And by the third time, rather than exhausted and about to collapse, he's sprinting.
That's hysterical.
So the first time I had him come out, the first time in like a Greek key walker. So he was like, you know, and then the second pass, he was kind of, you know, jogging and had trainers on. And then the third pass at Music Circus, he had Heelys and he zipped around the whole thing and landed. And it was so funny. So I said to Stuart Lane, you have to learn how to do Heelys. He's like, what? So we kind of modified it for him. So we gave him a cane and then a walker.
Oh my god!
Speakers or something. So
I played that.
I thought that was very contemporary.
I very much appreciate that.
I thought it was really silly and fun.
Yeah.
And doing, you know, I did it at Music Circus twice, and I remember Michael Schweikart was my set designer, and we're working, and we're like coming up with like, you know, doors in the corners of the circle, right? There's bombs.
Yeah.
It's like a clock. So it's like 1, 5, 7, 11 are the entrances, yeah, right? And the pit is at 12. And then Leland Ball comes by and he goes, you know, you can't have doors. This is in the round. And we're like, we're doing forum. And he's like, yeah, you can't have doors. So we figured out a way to do, and we couldn't have a curtain either, you know, because we're not doing a proscenium.
Yeah.
So we figured out a way to do it. And Michael was so smart. We made these little porches. We made three porches. And the porches also had like secret doors. So the proteans could like open things up and pull things out of it, like a toy box.
Yeah.
And for the opening number, we brought out staffs. DJ Salisbury choreographed it for me. At Music Circus, and we brought these giant staffs out and we planted them in the porches so that the audience could see S for Senex, E for Erroneous, and S for Senex, E for Erroneous, and what's the third one?
Marcus Lycus.
So, and then they would have this whole sort of like jousting thing going on in the opening number. It was really fun. But we did forum without doors. Like it was hilarious. And so when we got to the chase,
yeah,
Gary Beach was just such a treasure. He just would improvise and scream out things like, you know, it's the plague. Run all the way to Vacaville or something. He would be like, and then the second time I did it, we just had people kind of stop and look at each other and quote lyrics or lines from the other shows of the season. Like,
oh, that's funny. Them
stop and go. They were doing Little Night Music that summer, and I had Lycus and Pseudolus go, "Sir, sir," and then take off. You know, like, so you know that show just lends itself to,
yeah,
anything zany you can think of, throw it in there, you know. So yeah, I've done forum four times.
Wow, I wish I'd seen Gary Beach. That would have been
Gary Beach.
Yeah.
You know, Peter was like cerebral and small. Gary was a true vaudevillian.
Yeah.
But had an elegance about him that was unmatchable. Like nobody came close. He made me laugh. So we did Of the I Sing at Arena Stage, and he played Wintergreen. And we laughed so hard in rehearsal that I just thought, you know, it's always the curse, right? If you're laughing in rehearsal,
right,
then when you do it in front of the audience, it's not going to be funny.
Yeah.
That was not true of Gary Beach. Anything he did that made you laugh was 10 times funnier with an audience. Can I tell you one Gary Beach story?
Please.
So, you know, in Forum, when Hysterium is dressed as the woman is laying on the bier.
Yeah.
And Marcus Lycus comes, I mean, Miles Gloriosus comes in and says, first a farewell kiss.
Yeah.
And then he's going to go kiss her, right? Well, in the round, I had Gary here. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Gary on one side and Miles here and the bier in the middle.
Yeah.
And Chris Carl was playing Miles, and he goes, but first a farewell kiss. And Gary walked, kissed him, and then walked all the way back. And the audience on this side saw him coming, and then, you know, he planted him a big kiss, and then he went back. And the audience over there lost their mind. So it was like this 360 degree laugh. And it was unbelievable. So 5 years later, they invite me to come back and do the show again.
Yeah.
We kind of recreated it. Gary wasn't available. He was doing producers or something. And so we asked Jimmy Brennan. And Jimmy, in the scene when I was blocking it, Jimmy kept scooching over. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, I got to be over there for the kiss. I go, you're going to do something. And then you're going to write Gary Beach a thank you note. And I made him do it. And he did it. And he said, Marsha, he wrote me like 2 days later after the show had been running a couple of nights. He said, I have never in my life had a laugh like that. And I said, well, you better thank Gary Beach.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
And that was like, passing on time steps, you know,
that was
taking from genius and giving it over and allowing somebody to live in that glorious, just unabashed talent. Gary just was something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Marsha, this has been amazing. I'm so grateful for your time.
I'm glad you reached out. Stories. Thank you.
Yeah. I know people are going to really appreciate all these. And you know, I mean, and it's so wonderful to talk about Gary Beach because, you know, what a great talent. And not people don't talk about him enough. So I'm very happy.
Oh, I was so lucky. I met him doing that. Of the icing, we did a Closer Than Ever together in California at Pasadena Playhouse, and obviously we did this Forum, and then he was in producers, but then he moved to Palm Beach Gardens, and I was at the Maltz Jupiter Theater, and he went up to Andrew Cato one day and said, I want to work here, and so when I did Hello Dolly with Vicki Lewis and Gary Beach, talk about just comedy bliss, right?
Yeah.
It was just heavenly. And Gary said, I'm thank you for Horace Vandergelder. I can now play him for the next 10 years. And sadly, he didn't make it. He died like 3 years after that, I think it was. Yeah. We miss him.
Well, I will not soon forget the story of the going and coming on the lap.
My God. Just like you, when you take the time to let the moment be what it's supposed to be, the audience will stick with you. They won't get fidgety, right?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I take that as a lesson every day. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and congratulations on your work with Mamie.
Oh, she's so great. Well, we've had so much fun.
Oh, my gosh. You know, she closed Ragtime.
Yes, yes. No, wait, no, I didn't know that. I was thinking of Cats. No, I knew that she understudied Christiane. I didn't know that she had replaced
her. Yes, Christiane had booked out that weekend for concerts. And when we got our closing notice, I said, are you going to stay? And she said, no, I'm going to go. And so Mamie went on.
Oh, I wish I'd seen her do it. I bet she's so incredible as mother.
Yeah, Mamie went on, and she was just spectacular. Yeah. So call me again when you want to talk about Forum or Merrily or
High Society.
Any of the other High Society.
Well, I hope we get to meet in person soon, but
it's great
to look at you over the Zoom.
And I'll keep my eyes on your eyeglasses too.
So. Thank you, Marcia. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Bye. Bye again. Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went Into the Woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 43 with Daniel Henning, the witch in James Lapine's blocking exercises.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.